I think we've lost sight of the fact that what is a real possibility for education is for it to lead, for it to say, what are the new mindsets? I am preparing people for a future. You are rooted in the present, right? How do I equip people for the future, and how do I equip them, you know, and then give them a mindset that is much more comfortable in ushering in our future rather than merely following what exists today? I think that is the opportunity, really.
You are listening to The Edge Show. Welcome to The Edge Show, a podcast where I sit with some amazing personalities from across sectors and borders to have meaningful conversation on topics that matter to us. Welcome back. Today we have a very special guest with us. He is a well-known columnist who has been writing in some top publications on matters related to brand and consumer. He is a social commentator, an advertising genius, an author, an alumni of IIM Ahmedabad, someone who has served on the board of ING Vaishya Bank and presently sits on the boards of various flagship organizations including Future Consumer Products Limited, Oxfam India, Breakthrough, and he is the Managing Director and CEO of Future Brands Limited. He is Santosh Desai. Hi Santosh, welcome on The Edge Show.
My great pleasure to be here.
Santosh, I was going through one of your earlier posts in which you had written that MBA did not open my mind enough to new modes of thinking. And while it spoke of thinking outside the box, it spent all its energies in building the box instead.
Right.
Can you elaborate on this further? And what according to you should be the actual role of MBA in a student's life?
So I'll start by saying what the MBA did do for me, and then I'll talk about what it did not. So I think it certainly helped, a certain logical, analytical, you know, framework, so which you could apply to, you know, any problem. So it certainly helped in sort of crystallizing that. So, you know, you approach every problem in a certain way. The limiting aspect of the MBA that I found was the fact that because it was actually so rigidly kind of limited by a worldview of you know what you have as constraints and resources, which are existing constraints and existing resources. At its heart, I believe the MBA is a resource allocation program. So you have a set of objectives, you have some resources, you have some constraints, and you have to marshal your resources subject to the constraint in the best possible way so that you can get as close as possible to your objectives. This is broadly at its heart what the MBA kind of method is. And this, to my mind, means there is no scope for conception and creation. So because you start with a given view of the world, this is what you have, and what can you make of it? I find this extremely limiting. A, B, the subjects that are fed into this and what you kind of have as your material tends to be quite narrow. There are so many things that are outside the ambit of an MBA program. Design is outside, for instance, which I find absurd. I mean, if you are in a world today, if you were to create anything, if you don't understand the principles of design, and I don't mean it only in its aesthetic sense, but in a systemic sense, you don't have a starting point. You cannot actually build anything without understanding how the pieces kind of come together. A lack of a certain a systemic kind of view where you understand how the moving parts are interrelated with each other, A, and B, how time works. In the absence of understanding the effect of either time or the fact that a system is made up of so many parts, so many of them outside what you narrowly call business. So that if you don't understand the entire kind of ecosystem in which business operates, you don't understand society. So you don't have a view of anthropology so you don't understand the social sciences at one level, you don't understand design and creativity on the other. So there are these two very large pieces that are missing in the frameworks that you develop, which means that you come up with very templatized, routinized thinking more often than not, which is also what I find that the MBA in practice, when you, a whole lot of MBAs, sharp, bright, intelligent, articulate, creative people, what the program and thereafter the kind of jobs that they do is actually reduces them successively into becoming more and more kind of, prototypes of each other.
One thing which I really like about you and the way you write your articles is that at multiple platforms you have spoken about the importance of creativity and innovation, and which I also feel is something which lacks in MBA. And not just in MBA, don't you feel that we should inculcate creativity and innovation right from the schools?
Yeah, it's interesting you should say that, because I would argue that the way our schools have been designed, their principal aim is to limit our creativity. Right. And I don't mean it. I'm not saying that lightly when I say their principal aim is to do that. It's not just hyperbolic. You look at young children, before they get into school, they don't understand categories. They don't understand labels. They don't understand, the differences. For them, everything kind of fluidly kind of moves into the other. So while they're eating, they're playing. So if you just look at the number of things that they are capable of processing simultaneously, how fluidly they move from one to the other, from one mood state to the other, from one thought to the other, from one activity to the other. Now, education has been constructed as a system. In an organized education has been constructed to, in an industrial era, the education we have inherited, which means you're trying to create a disciplined workforce. So what you do is you take this untrammeled, uninhibited creativity of really young kids, and then you make them stand in lines, you make them wear school uniforms, at least in our country you do. You make them do, you call them by roll number, you don't call them by name, in a lot of places, or you call them by surname. So you limit their individuality. You try and create a certain uniformity in the name of discipline, right? And what you are in effect doing is you are in effect training them to become more conforming, more kind of linearly minded, people who can then fit into a designated slot in a workforce. And this is the overhang of education that has existed, that in many ways, in the name of, this is how education is meant to be, we are perpetuating. So therefore, at the level of schools in particular, and I can say this with confidence, certainly, I think it's true for many parts of the world, but certainly in India, you find that, and so many schools are proudest of the fact that we are very disciplined, that discipline in a school is great, which to my mind is something that, schools should be embarrassed about and certainly not proud about.
I agree with you on this, and I could relate it completely with it. And also with Sir Ken Robinson's TED Talk, where he categorically mentioned that school kills creativity. One thing which I would like to understand from you is that you have completed your graduation and MBA from prestigious institutions. And now that your daughters have also completed their studies, do you feel that the education is still the same? Or has it also transitioned or transformed with the time?
It's an interesting question. And I think there have been changes, but I don't think, if I look at, two different things. One is that the times that I grew up in and the material that we had and the world that we lived in, the exposure that we had, the means that we had to get exposed to the world versus the ones that my daughters, the world that they grew up in. The difference is so dramatic. It's like completely, they're different worlds, right? The most digital generations live in a completely different reality. And it is particularly true of the young people. Yet, if I look at their education system, as it turns out, my daughters went to the same school, in fact, for a much longer time than I did, but as I did. And while it's a great school, the issue is that there is not very much at all that had changed in the huge sort of a time difference between my time and theirs. And I think that is also true. I mean, I obviously am not a student anymore, but I am associated with some educational institutions and of the kind that I went to. And I see, yes, there is a difference. Of course, in terms of the modes and means of education, some of them are different. But fundamentally, we still divide the world up into subjects. We still, have exams of a very similar kind. those exams are still based on the same kind of considerations as they always were. There might be minor differences, but there aren't major differences. There is a little more project work. There is a little more discussion than that used to happen in my time. But fundamentally, the education has not changed.
Well, I am with the same thought. Because when I was a student, I had faced a lot of challenges. And now when I see students facing challenges, I can actually relate to it. That yes, it has changed to a certain extent with the change in time, but fundamentally the roots are still the same. However, when we see education at both school or higher education level, and when I see unemployment and unemployability factor in majority of the countries, then I believe that education is not just killing creativity, but it is also making people incompetent. And now that you are, you know, an MD of one of the largest consulting firm as well, and you have headed some of the top organizations in India while recruiting individuals, have you also felt the same?
Yes, I think so. I think it's true that in a lot of ways what education does is hinder rather than help individuals in terms of their capability building. And a lot of it actually, much more than that, is just wasted. You cannot tell the difference between somebody who's, educated in a certain way and somebody who's not, barring maybe a handful of institutions. The important thing in an education is extras, in a sense, which I think are very important, but it's the kind of socialization that you've gone through, the kind of friends that you have, and if those happen to be worthwhile, that environment actually is more useful than the education itself. The way in which, things are taught means that students retain virtually nothing of the content of their education. Very little they end up retaining. And if the form is not inspiring, then what happens is that there is very little to hang on to. And I think that's the problem that I think one faces when one is recruiting also, which is the fact that you cannot depend on, which is generally true also, you should never depend only on education. But you have to, in fact, in many cases, just look beyond it. And in some cases, just completely ignore it. What matters is the person and not how the person has been educated, unfortunately.
And now that your daughter Pallavi has also started her own venture, first of all, a big congratulations to you and to her.
Thank you.
Well, is it a fashion brand or a label?
Yes, it's a high quality everyday basics brand. So you make everyday basic kind of thing, but high quality and a sustainable natural kind of brand.
Do you feel that the present education system that we have both at school or higher education level is actually nurturing entrepreneurs in a much better sense?
Well, it does play some role. It's not as if education plays no role at all, because I think it does provide, particularly in the case of my daughter, for instance, her basic graduation degree was in philosophy. It does not kind of help her do anything in a very tangible way, although it's very useful in some other forms. So for her to move towards doing her own business, for her doing an MBA was useful because it gave her exposure to a vocabulary and a way of thinking that she otherwise would not have had exposure to. So it was useful, but that is at the first level alone, right? But to become an entrepreneur, I don't think in a general sense education is geared for that, because that's not how it imagines itself. It imagines itself as throwing out professionals. In our world, certainly in my time and even up to now, what gets valorized and what gets celebrated is you study well, you do well academically, you go to a good institution, you get a good job, and you get a good, and you kind of live a stable, comfortable life. That is the aspiration that most people have grown up with and continue to grow up with. So unless, and again, if education is not fundamentally about the process of creation, but it is about the process of either knowledge acquisition or management, you fundamentally will not breed or you will not create an environment conducive to independent thinking entrepreneurs. And there's nobody more independent thinking than an entrepreneur. And I think that is a failing of the education system, that if it does not produce independence of thought, then the corresponding kind of independence in actions have become that much more difficult.
Other than this, I've also felt that our education is equipped for two main streams, engineering and MBBS. And this is by and large our society is also looking for.
Yes, I certainly think that historically there was a premium on you know, I mean, see, India is one of those places where very few places in the world you have such a rigid hierarchy in education. That science is best, then is commerce, then is arts. I mean, you know, I've grown up with a time where it was, everybody knows, you know, not just science, commerce, arts. Within engineers also, you know that mechanical engineer is better than civil engineer, is better than metallurgical engineer, is better than ceramic engineer. You know, I mean, I'm just saying, and these hierarchies are based on nothing. They are there, they have no correspondence to real life. What we have done is, by creating this completely wholly constructed and artificial kind of a sense of a hierarchy and a sense of, you know, valorizing some disciplines without an interest in those disciplines. You're not saying engineering and doctors and engineers are great because you value the kind of knowledge or the kind of or because so many people are bright, people are excited by those, but because they're meant to be above and higher than others, so you follow those. You know, our doctor's life is arguably incredibly difficult. It takes a very long time to get qualified to a level to which is now acceptable. And it calls for a really difficult life, right? So it's not as if it's an easy, comfortable life that you get as a doctor. But because it has been so deeply ingrained that this is worth chasing, you find that the system kind of ends up producing that. At another level, you just to take the sort of the perhaps the deeper import of your point is the fact that in India in particular, all our concerns about education are narrowly limited to the top professions and the top institutions. So whenever people talk about education, they will either talk about the IITs or the IIMs. You know, that they become kind of a shorthand for education in this country. These are turning out a few thousand students. I mean, they're irrelevant in the overall scheme of things. And yet, we equate education excellence or otherwise with this very narrow band of that's our imagination has got hijacked by an elitist.
Don't you feel that this narrow band has actually become a status quo?
Exactly. Exactly. And I think this is a challenge, because that's why we are not paying attention to, and you mentioned employability. The problem of employability comes because there are a vast number of people who are allegedly going through education, allegedly getting degrees, but who have simply the institutions do not have the resources, do not have the means of passing on any knowledge of any kind, because they themselves actually are just makeshift arrangements. So what you have is, I think, and this, for instance, engineering in particular in India has a crisis because of the sort of mushrooming of private colleges all over the country. You have a staggering number of colleges giving engineering degrees, which have made the degree worthless for barring a few small set of institutions. So I think this is the cost, because you've just valorized a couple of disciplines. So you had a demand, you know, a supply glut in some of those. As a result, you have had a steep decline in quality, which means, ironically, the thing you chase most, an engineering degree, is the thing that gives you the least guarantee of getting a job.
And that actually reminds me of one of the articles that you had written, and I'm quoting one of the statements from the same article, is that the world is full of best practices. And if we start practicing the best practices, then we end up following others' footsteps. Do you feel that this is exactly what is happening in the education space?
You know, see, this is the thing. It's a herd mentality, right? What happens is, and this is not even best practice, to be honest. I mean, it is just any practice. But I think what happens is, see, there are two parts to this. One is the fact that there is a herd kind of a mentality, because you believe that the same thing has happened with MBA schools, not just in India, but across the world, because the MBA, then after the doctorate, the engineer, the desirable profession became the MBA. You had any number of MBA schools that have mushroomed, and with, you know, very little quality, very little prospect of providing any kind of a reasonable employment kind of an opportunity. And this is the herd mentality. So one part of this, you know, best practice kind of a mindset is this, the fact that you end up doing what everybody else is doing. At the other level, what happens is that in corporations also, and in you know, everywhere else, what happens is that when our mental model is the fact that others are doing something well, let me do what others are doing. We stop asking as to what works for me, right? You start following cut and paste, you know, other practices, but those practices, and we've seen this, you know, when the MBA schools came to India, if you're borrowing things from the American universities, there is a different cultural context there. There is a different employment context there. Simply kind of, you know, doing a cut and paste job on what you see elsewhere, and which I think is, in a larger sense, it stifles creativity and imagination. If you're forever looking to saying, I can't invent anything, somebody else has invented something, let me borrow that, without understanding as to how it works for me. Of course, one must learn from others. I'm not arguing that you should be closed and only look at and trying to do everything from scratch. There is a lot of resident body of knowledge and experiences one must learn from. But eventually, one must create for oneself and one must think for oneself. And I think that is where I think this best practice mindset, you know, is a problem, because it comes in the way of believing that we can think for ourselves and create something worthwhile.
We broadly understand the Indian education system and what we were doing so far. But do you feel that the national education policy that the government has recently announced will actually bring any change in the education system?
Look, I think there are parts, I think several parts of the policy where the intention certainly is, you know, moving in the right direction. Certainly there is a direction which I think is a way forward. I mean, there are other parts that, you know, perhaps could be much better, but let me focus just on the parts where I think the direction and the intent, I think, is well spelled out. The problem to my mind is, you know, what it calls for and what it means is, see, without a corresponding a resourcing that takes place, which means you need money, right? You need a comprehensive program to change the mindset of educators, right? Because it's very easy to set down a set of regulations, but to actually convert them into any meaningful, so they cannot simply become bureaucratic checklists, which become ways of, in fact, just, you know, so you always in India have had a whole lot of checklists against which people have to, you know, perform across all sectors. I think what is important is that it doesn't only end there, and it actually, there is a responsibility taken for changing the mindset, and there is a responsibility taken for saying, okay, let me back up this talk with action and with money. Without a much greater allocation to education, and without a program to actually overhaul the way educators think, and therefore then the way they deliver education, I think this could be a lot of good intent, but with nothing much to follow.
You know, one common thing that we have been speaking a lot, and even we had discussed in our last call, that majority of the jobs that we have are going to obsolete in the next 5 to 6 years. Do you feel that the national education policy will actually be able to bridge the gap?
I think that is a real challenge, and the challenge comes at all levels, but certainly the closer you are to a job, the challenge is greater. The fact is that if you don't understand the nature of the change that is taking place, and if we don't gear ourselves, you know, quickly enough to sort of align with that, we are, you know, see, it's, let me begin by acknowledging the fact that, you know, because of the changes that are taking place are so fast and so potentially transformational, it is not easy for education to keep pace, right? Because education is a slow, lumbering beast, you know, and it is spread over so many years, and to turn this kind of a large kind of a beast quickly and point it in some other direction is not easy. But unless you start, and you have to begin by at least having a scenario for what the world will need 5 years. And I'm not sure that exercise has been done, right? So without having at least a basic sense of what the future might look like, and nobody knows the future, but at least some scenario building and some principles that you draw out as a result of that, and you say, see, right now we are correcting the past. See, the NEP is something that should have been done 20 years. We are really correcting the past. We are not planning for the future. And the past needs to be corrected for, because I think that, you know, as we've spoken about, you know, in the last some time, but that is by no means enough, you know, to prepare for the future.
Actually, the path needs to be corrected. And, you know, one thing which I have also seen is a disconnect between education and outside world, in a sense that there seems to be a disconnect between what the students are studying and what skill sets the employers are expecting. And when I was going through the NEP and I saw that it's a 20-year implementation strategy, as it is going to be implemented by 2040. So do you think that whatever we will be implementing in the next 5 years or 5 years down the line will be relevant at that point in time?
See, that is a very good question. See, in theory, you can say that, you know, you can put a 20-year plan, and if you are willing to, you know, kind of review it every 2 years or every 3 years, and you can keep modifying, changing dramatically sometimes the plan, you could still argue that it could work, right? So it's good to have a 20-year plan, as long as, you know, you have the ability and the flexibility to, you know, keep reviewing it as the world changes. But the problem is that if you don't have those review mechanisms, and if you don't have the review mindset, and if your bureaucracy itself doesn't move fast enough to do that, then you're always, you know, always going to be, you know, a couple of decades late. Because by the time you decide that, you know, something is worth reviewing, the world has changed so that that review itself becomes meaningless. So I think that is a problem. That is a problem that, you know, this whole kind of way of looking at education. And also when you're trying to catch up, you know, and make up for stuff that you should have done in the past, then unless you accelerate and you really move fast, and you try and collapse and compress the changes in a relatively short period of time, it's going to be very difficult, very difficult. And education is very difficult to change in the policy, in a policy sense, because the such strong vested interests, and understandably so, parents, students, all of them are so terrified of change, because change is scary. And, you know, everybody prepares and everybody has been used to exams being a certain way, admissions being a certain way. The moment you change any of that, it there is such a public kind of an outcry that is possible, that politically it becomes very difficult for governments to sort of push through with a radical change quickly, because there is resistance, although it is for the benefit of people only and students. But it doesn't necessarily be seen, it doesn't get seen like that. Because what gets seen is the fact that this is a disruptive change, which I don't understand. And I have been preparing using the old set of rules. Now we've suddenly changed the rules and I'm terrified.
So fading away of this mental block will actually take its own sweet time, as we have been growing or have grown up in the same mental block.
No, absolutely. And so that's the point. But unless, so see, this is the thing. Today, what education requires is a new mindset in terms of policy, but it also requires the courage to weather the storm that will inevitably take place when you change anything in education. However useful it might be, however job-oriented it might be, because people are afraid of, and you, what has happened is that because education has changed so little over the years, there is no expectation that nobody, you know, argues when the job market changes, because people expect the job market to be volatile. But people will argue vehemently when the smallest thing in education changes, because you're used to education not changing. So I think part of the problem of, so unless you keep changing things and unless you have the courage to stand by your changes, what will happen is that, you know, again we'll lapse back into, I mean, right now the NEP for, you know, you could argue against and you could critique the NEP, but the problem is that the NEP in its current form also, between talking about it and implementing it, there is still a distance to be bridged.
We surely have a long way to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Since you have widely spoken about the lack of creativity and innovation, how do you see it transitioning from this phase, as these are the times when our economy and markets are disrupting? But when we see our education system, we see very little or no disruption.
Yeah, I think certainly, you know, I think it should be, see, the kind of, the greatest room that you have for change is at the youngest ages. And then, so if you look at it in that way, it's like a reverse pyramid kind of a structure, where you bring about the biggest change when the kids are youngest, and gradually build change as you you know, as they you know, become older. Then I think that the whole idea of subjects and dividing the world into subjects should happen as late as possible. To me, so creativity is not something about doing something wild and wacky. Creativity is a mental fluidity which is able to see interrelationship between things and is not limited by categories and labels. Right. So, you know, where your mind is not always said, this is, don't do this, don't do this, this is wrong, this is outside the boundary. It should be to say, if a thought, see, it's like a, in an internet world, and I think today the digital world is a good metaphor or a good kind of template to use. I mean, it's like having these hyperlinks, right? So today I am reading something on one subject, and there is a, you know, there is something else which is a reference to a name there, and I can click on that and look at the wiki page of that person, and that tells their personal story. And that personal story, I can click on something and go to a completely different subject. That's how our mind works, right? We are kind of, you know, always moving from one to the other, toggling between very different worlds in a very short period of time, right? It's not how our education works. So, and the young mind, if it is allowed to pursue questions rather than pursue subjects, you know, then I think, and you can gradually give structure to it. One can gradually also give a certain amount of structure, form, and discipline. A certain amount is important even for the purposes of creativity. But you begin by opening up the world and allowing people to play. And you continue that spirit as you go along. Why, you know, today everything bleeds into everything else, right? So if you don't allow for that possibility, that where we are able to create, you know, rounded, fluid thinkers who can move from one subject to the other, who can imagine new things, and who are not limited by what you know currently, or the fact that where everything has boundaries that we must be aware of. You know, I mean, we are a country where, you know, we still talk about the fact that in an exam, this is in the syllabus and this is not in the syllabus. It's an absurd idea, you know, as to the whole notion of those kind of rigid boundaries that, you know, what am I supposed to learn and what I'm not supposed to learn. I think we need to free that up in a fundamental way, and also teaching methods correspondingly. You know, now there is so much that is possible. And the third thing that I must, because it's a pet kind of a subject of mine, is self-learning. I think the digital form and the fact that everybody has a mobile phone today allows people to learn so much on their own, right? I'm actually amazed as to why education does not create, why should you not have in physics, you know, why can't you create modules and apps which allow you to actually explore something by yourself? You know, at your pace, at your understanding. Why should I not understand subjects which use a combination of multimedia, gaming, all of it, but allow me, without the help, some videos of anybody else, to learn things for myself?
I'm actually thinking that we are living in a society where we ask our students not to bring mobile phones or tablets in the school. And this is actually the age when they should be exposed to these technologies, isn't it?
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. I think it's very important for people to use every means that is. See, it's like, you know, I mean, it's just that what happens is that the technology of an earlier time you think is fine, the technology of today's time is not. So it's not as if you have a problem with technology, right? I mean, you know, it's just the fact that this is the problem. The fact that we believe that whatever is today, it's somehow cheating. It's somehow unfair for them to use today's technologies to help them kind of learn more. And particularly when they can do it on their own. I mean, why should education have to, you know, why is it up to teachers to teach? You know, why must we, you know, we depend on teachers so much? I'm not saying teachers, I think, are very important. But they are one means of creating, knowledge and then transferring knowledge. You know, in a world where you can create knowledge or you can at least explore things on your own, you know, you can redefine the role of teachers to be much more mentors, much more guiders, curators of knowledge, shapers of knowledge, allowing every individual to grow in a unique way. I mean, if you were to center education around each individual and move towards that system where you say, okay, let's design things so that, you know, individual capabilities are kind of enhanced, rather than one system of education where everybody has to fall in line, you just reverse it. I think those are the kind of imaginations that are needed going forward.
I couldn't agree more on this. What, according to you, should schools or higher ed institutions be doing in order to bridge the gap?
No, I do think that. So therefore, I think firstly is to have your, you know, a mental model of education that itself is aligned to today. And so therefore, understand the codes of today. So the fact is, today schools, see, what happens is that we start thinking about employment or the use of education. It doesn't have to be employment. It can be entrepreneurship, it can be, you know, artist, you know, being an artist, it can be anything. It can be any pursuit that you want. But we don't adequately understand the nature of those pursuits. And we don't work backwards from there to say, okay, if this is what, you know, education eventually must be in service of, then how should it be structured so that we help students get there? I think, so what happens is that we define education as an end in itself. And part of it needs to be that also. Part of it, education needs to be just pure education. You know, just saying this is knowledge that has been handed down through the generations, which I must pass on to the next generation. But that's a small part. The much larger part has to be to say, how do I equip people to sort of to find the best among themselves and to bring it out in the world in the most meaningful way possible. And I think that without that starting point, everything else therefore is very difficult for the rest of education to be aligned to that. So I think that is one. The other is in terms of methods of teaching. I think it's very important now to recognize that and acknowledge the fact that the world around us has changed. People have so many more ways of getting exposed and learning. How do you harness that? How do you create a new kind of a pedagogical system that harnesses the kind of learning instruments that students have at their disposal already? So if you were to actually build that in, I think you could multiply the kind of power of education by actually integrating that in a central way and building new tools of education that allow us to sort of actually, you know, take advantage of all that is available now. So I think pedagogy is the other big kind of a change that I see that is necessary.
And do you think that bridging the gap between the industry and academia, by which I mean giving early exposure to students about various industries or professions, can actually help them transition through this phase?
No, I think that's a good idea. And I think, but in a, what I would want it done is in a non-doctrinaire way. What I mean is not in a, see, I think there is a difference between training and education, right? And too much of a focus on employment and on specific employment opportunities creates a training mindset. Because it says, I have to prepare myself to fit into that. The fact of the matter is that the school level, it'll be in 10 years' time, those industries will be changed. So I take the spirit of what you're saying, which is to say, let them understand what work life is about. Let them go to not just say, you know, companies, let them go to, you know, television studios, let them go to artists, let them go to, you know, let them go to the professions of different kinds. Let them understand how those worlds work. Then I think the bridging of the gap without sacrificing on creativity and without sacrificing on the fact that education must open people's mind and not make them desirous of fitting into something that exists, but in creating a new world. And I think, so in some senses, I think it's just as much as education must understand the outside world, but education's role in society is to lead, it is not to follow. It is to create a template for a better tomorrow. It is to create a template. So if anything, educators should be foreseeing the future and they should be ahead of industry. I mean, that is the role of education. The role of education, because historically it was to follow industry. I think we've lost sight of the fact that what is a real possibility for education is for it to lead, for it to say, what are the new mindsets? I am preparing people for a future. You are rooted in the present. Right. How do I equip people for the future and how do I equip them, you know, and then give them a mindset that is much more comfortable in ushering in our future rather than merely following what exists today? I think that is the opportunity.
That's actually a very valid point. Well, technically, education should be creating new industries.
Exactly. It should be creating new mindsets. It should be foreseeing the future. It should be preparing people. You're preparing people for life. You're not. You know, trying to train people to take care of what already exists. And in a world that is moving quickly, unlike a world perhaps earlier, it is important for education to be out there, you know, equipping people with things that you will need 20 years from now.
I couldn't agree more. And with this, it's time to say goodbye to you, Santosh. Thank you for taking your time for this meaningful conversation.
My pleasure, Himanshu.
I hope that you have enjoyed listening to this conversation with Santosh Desai. If you have liked the conversation, then do rate us on Apple Podcasts and share it in your network. And we will meet again in the next episode with another amazing guest. Thank you for listening to The Ed Show. You can now listen to the same podcast on Apple and Google Podcasts, or you can watch it live on YouTube. And I'll see you in the next episode. Till then, stay safe and stay happy.